The Fourth District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable John W. Turner presiding.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
We're here on case number 4220927. That's Antrim v. Caps, the Pekin Insurance Company. Would counsel for the appellant please identify yourself?
Julieta Cosiba.
Cosiba. Okay, thank you. And counselor for the appellee, would you please state your name for the record?
Absolutely. James Van Rieden.
Thank you. Ms. Cosiba, you may proceed with your argument.
Thank you. This appeal concerns a citation proceeding that was instituted by Ameren as the plaintiff and judgment creditor against third-party respondent Pekin Insurance Company for recovery on a judgment that was obtained against defendant and judgment debtor Clarence D. Capps in the amount of $97,676.66. The judgment was obtained on the basis of Mr. Capps' negligence in driving a vehicle into a bucket lift truck owned by Ameren on December 5th, 2017. While operating a Ford Focus that was owned by Michael L. Toft. And the Ford Focus at the time of the accident was insured by a policy that Pekin issued to Mr. Toft, policy number 00P671154. Ameren sued Mr. Katz and Mr. Toft in the underlying case. Mr. Capps proceeded pro se, and Mr. Toft was represented by the same counsel that is representing Pekin in the citation proceeding. Mr. Toft was voluntarily dismissed without objection by his counsel. And then Ameren filed a motion for summary judgment against Mr. Capps. The motion was briefed and heard, and the circuit court granted the motion and entered judgment on December 6th, 2021. Although Pekin complains about the judgment being entered against an unrepresented party, it identifies no deficiency with the judgment or the manner in which it was obtained. Now, after obtaining judgment, Ameren filed a citation to discover assets pursuant to Section 2-1402 of the Illinois Code of Civil Procedure, and it issued a records and deposition subpoena to Pekin pursuant to Illinois Supreme Court Rule 277E. Pekin filed a motion to quash that subpoena, arguing that the insurance policy is not relevant. Pekin did not deny the existence of the policy or its potential applicability. Rather, it argued that the policy did not provide coverage because Mr. Capps was purportedly not a permissive driver and had refused coverage. Meanwhile, Ameren filed a motion for turnover order pursuant to Section 2-1402C, seeking that Pekin be compelled to deliver proceeds under the insurance policy up to the $300,000 limit identified in that policy on the basis of the undisputed facts that were already in the record at that time. On September 14th, 2022, the circuit court improperly granted Pekin's motion to quash and incorrectly denied Ameren's motion for turnover order. Ameren and Pekin, the only parties to this appeal, agree as to what issues are presented for review and the standard of review. I will first start with the appellant's argument that the circuit court incorrectly denied Ameren's motion for turnover order. Ameren was entitled to an order compelling Pekin to deliver the insurance proceeds under the policy to satisfy the December 6th, 2021 judgment.
Counsel, let me raise a question here. Isn't the issue in this case really whether the Capps was a permissive driver under the insurance policy?
Yes, that is the issue regarding the coverage question, which relates to Ameren's motion for turnover.
So if he were a permissive driver under the policy, then Pekin would have to cover him and the protections of the policy would apply. And if he were not, then they were not. Would that be correct?
As to the coverage question, that's correct. If Mr. Capps qualified as a permissive driver, then there would be coverage.
Isn't the question of whether he was a permissive driver a question of fact?
It involves an analysis of the facts, but the issue, it is our position that that is the facts in the record are undisputed. And the question is of application of those undisputed facts.
Well, among other facts in the record that you attached in your response from depositions of Toft and Turner, one of them was that Turner was in a romantic relationship with Capps, and on the day in question, Capps asked to use their car. And this is, I think, from your argument. Quote, although Turner claimed she said no, she handed over the keys to the vehicle to Capps, allegedly so that he could obtain something from the car, unquote. Did not make any statements or place any restrictions on his use of the keys. Now, pausing right there, it seems to me, if I were the trier of fact on this question, if I were the judge hearing all of this, it might be very helpful to actually see and hear the witnesses who are testifying to see what did Turner say and how did she say it, and to see cross-examination of her, for that matter, which, though I never really gave her permission, where the trier of fact could conclude based upon her testimony. No, I don't think that's what really happened here. I think this is after the fact thinking in her part that she really gave him the keys. Understanding he was going to be driving the car or using the car. But here we just have a written document. And so my question is, in the absence of actual live testimony, how's the trial court supposed to resolve this? And for instance, when you say, although Turner claims she said no, she handed over the keys to Capps, why isn't the trial court permitted to give weight to Turner saying, no, you can't use the car, even though it's not believable? I mean, how do we resolve this?
It is our position that based on the undisputed record as it existed, coverage should have been found. But to the extent that any credibility determinations should have been made or any further evidence evaluated, Ameren should have been given the right to conduct the discovery that was requested, which is the issue with the circuit court denying or granting the motion to quash and depriving Ameren to the right to obtain discovery and then present the evidence at hearing pursuant to the rules and code of procedure.
Did you ask to subpoena and have Turner testify at the hearing?
The first step was to subpoena Pekin and discover what additional evidence they had.
Well, everyone knew what the evidence was going to be from based upon what you had here. Y'all knew what the issue was going to be. The key issue is, what did Turner do and how did she do it? What did she say when she gave Capps the key? Isn't that it?
It would be our position that is not the issue. The issue is that based on the evidence in the record, initial permission was granted under the initial permission rule to Ms. Turner by her foster father, Mr. Toft, who owned the vehicle. And based on that initial permission and the initial permission rule, Ameren did not have to prove any further authorization or permission to Mr. Capps. It was Pekin's burden to prove any exception to that rule.
Well, leaving aside whose burden is for the moment, the question is, did Capps have Turner's permission to drive this car? I thought we agreed that was the issue.
Well, the issue is whether he's a permissive driver. And under under the initial permission rule, which was adopted by the Illinois Supreme Court, permission is found once and no further permission need to be shown from the to the subsequent driver.
Well, you mean if Caps had stolen the car after Turner had given permission, he's covered?
No, there are two exceptions to the initial permission rule, and that's theft or tortious conversion. And Pekin had the burden to establish that an exception applied. Otherwise, coverage should have been found under the omnibus clause of the insurance policy and the initial permission rule.
But the only evidence we have pertaining to the actual turnover of the car is Turner says no. She said no when Caps asked her to use the car. And you never had a proceeding where you said, we want Turner to be here in open court so we can ask questions of her.
Yes, it is our position that based on the evidence in the record, the relevant question is the permission that Mr. Toft granted to Ms. Turner. And thereafter, it was Pekin's burden to show a tortious conversion, which based on the record, it is our position that was not there was no evidence of tortious
conversion. Well, if it's true that Turner told Caps, no, you can't use the car, and he said, well, I got something in it, I want to get out, and she gave him the keys for that purpose, why isn't his subsequent driving a tortious conversion?
It is because tortious conversion, as defined by the Illinois Supreme Court, requires a showing of a substantial interference with or deprivation of an owner's right in the vehicle, as well as intent to indefinitely deprive the owner or the initial permittee of his rights therein. And in adopting that definition in the Verrucci case, the Illinois Supreme Court specifically rejected the traditional definition of tortious conversion.
What part of the definition you just gave wouldn't apply to Caps when he took the car without permission?
It is our position that he had at least implied permission, but nevertheless, there's no evidence that he took it.
Wait. What is the basis of the implied permission? She says no.
And then thereafter, she hands him the keys to the vehicle without any restrictions or limitations imposed on that. And she never says at any point, which she admitted in her deposition, that she did not tell Mr. Kapp specifically that he was not allowed to drive the car.
Counsel, isn't there some evidence that in the past she had allowed him to possess the keys to get something out of the vehicle?
There was some testimony in our deposition to that effect. That's correct.
And what is our standard of review?
De novo.
Even though there are factual questions that had to be resolved with regard to permission, our standard would still be de novo? It seems like it would be manifest weight. Why am I wrong on that?
Supporting case law was included in our brief, but there's several reasons for that. And one of the primary ones is because the circuit court made a ruling based on evidence in the record. There was no live testimony presented to it in court.
Well, following up on Justice Turner's question, why shouldn't we, as the trial court did, accept at face value Turner's statement that she said, no, you can't drive the car?
That was her testimony under oath.
Okay, so why doesn't that begin and end this case? And, again, what you're arguing to us, and I just don't understand how you can do it, is the trial court shouldn't have believed Turner when she said what she did, and we shouldn't either. Based upon what?
It is our position that it's not an issue of a credibility determination. We agree as to what Ms. Turner said. It's our position that under the initial permission rule, the only question that was left for the trial court to consider, and it was not disputed at any point that Ms. Turner had permission from Mr. Toft to use the car, and that Capps obtained the car from her. And so therefore the inquiry ends right there. That coverage is fixed even without any further showing of permission. And there, it was Pekin's burden to show that any exception applied. And under the exception, the tortious conversion exception, which was the only one that the circuit court could have based its finding on, was specifically defined by the Illinois Supreme Court and required substantial interference and intent to indefinitely deprive. And there isn't a record. There isn't any evidence in the record that supports that kind of finding.
Ms. Cosita, was Capps deposed?
He was not.
Okay. It would seem like you only got one side of the conversation there. Why wasn't he deposed?
No party had requested it. And as I indicated, it was Pekin's burden to prove that an exception applied. So if that was necessary, that was incumbent upon Pekin to request that. But Pekin asked to stop the move to quash our deposition and stop the proceedings at that point.
Well, you didn't ask for a deposition of Capps, though, did you?
We did not.
Okay, thank you.
And so further to the point, there is no evidence that Mr. Capps had an intent to indefinitely deprive Mr. Toft or Ms. Turner of the Ford Focus. And given that absence of the evidence, Pekin argues that Mr. Capps had that intent because he was an unauthorized driver. That argument once again ignores that under the initial permission rule, Mr. Capps did not need any specific authorization. Although, as I previously argued, he did have at least implied permission when Ms. Turner handed him over the keys without any limitation and did not revoke the implied consent. There is also no evidence that Mr. Capps substantially interfered with or deprived with Mr. Toft or Ms. Turner's use of the Ford Focus. Pekin claims that there was a substantial interference because Mr. Capps allegedly drove the vehicle for 2.2 miles. That calculation is based on Pekin's representation of a Google Maps calculation of a distance from what it claims to be the location of Ms. Turner's employment.
Well, wasn't there an accident which occurred and wasn't the car damaged badly?
Yes, we know the location.
So why does it matter how long the car was driven or how far or how long he had it when the car was no longer operable after the accident?
Because,
in other words, he might have been planning to drive to California and never return. We don't know. You never asked him. He's got this car and he's driven it 2.2 miles, and if he doesn't total it, it's pretty well damaged. Maybe it is total. And that's all we know about this, isn't it?
That's right. And based on that,
we're supposed to infer that he was just taken for a joyride and within a few minutes planned to return it to Turner and no harm done. Is that right?
I would not say that. I would say that it's Pekin's burden to show, once again, that there was an actual tortious conversion, and Pekin did not carry that burden. Therefore, it would have been improper for the circuit court to find a tortious conversion. And to the extent that there was any question about a tortious conversion, then Ameren should have been granted the opportunity to conduct discovery on that issue. Accordingly, the circuit court improperly granted Pekin's motion to quash. Pursuant to section 2-1402 of the code and rule 277, Ameren was entitled to discover assets, to identify any non-exempt assets that could be applied to the judgment. And under rule 277, that extends to any insurance proceeds that may have constituted an asset of Mr. Capps. the only limitation that was imposed on this by Rule 277 was the circuit court's power to terminate the deposition and otherwise control and direct the proceedings to ensure the interests of all parties and persons were protected and harassment avoided. Pekin did not argue that the requested deposition infringed on any of its rights or otherwise constituted harassment, but only argued that the requested discovery was not relevant and not needed, since the insurance policy, which it contended was the only piece of relevant piece of evidence, was already produced.
Wasn't that true? You already knew. In fact, again, everything about this case is known, except the whole question about was caps of permissive using. That's the only factual issue at issue here, isn't it?
Well, to the extent that there's a question of coverage and whether Mr. Kapp, and particularly on the tortious conversion
exception. Well, you have the policy. I mean, it's not as if you need discovery to get the policy, do you?
Not as to the policy, that's correct. We have okay. The policy. But to the extent that there's a question of coverage, and Pekin is arguing that there's no coverage based on the tortious conversion exception, that goes outside of the four corners of the policy. And Pekin itself attached a separate document to support its motion to quash. Therefore, given the issues of coverage raised by Pekin and Illinois' liberal discovery procedures, the circuit court should have denied Pekin's motion to quash.
Thank you, counsel. You're out of time, but you will have rebuttal. Mr. Van Reeden.
Thank you, Your Honors. James Van Reeden for the appellee, Pekin Insurance Company. At the outset, I do think it is important to distinguish here that there are two issues up on appeal involving two different pleadings in this case. First, a motion to quash the subpoena for a corporate representative deposition under Rule 206A. Pekin filed that motion to quash. And second, the motion for turnover, which was filed by the plaintiff in this case, in which they have a burden to support their claims therein if they were to succeed on that. So we do have two separate issues here that I hope not to conflate. As far as the facts that are pertinent to this case, I think Your Honors have already hit those facts on the head here. As to the motion for turnover, Mr. Capps arrived at Ms. Turner's place of work, asked if he could use the car. She said no, clearly understanding that that meant he could not drive the car. He made a lesser request to access the car to retrieve items. She said yes and gave him the keys for that purpose. He then took off with the car after being told no, that he could not use it, and was going to use it for some indefinite period of time, but for the fact that he collided with Ameren's bucket truck. As far as the motion to quash, the pertinent facts there are that plaintiff titled their subpoena as a subpoena pursuant to Illinois Supreme Court Rule 206A1 for a corporate representative of Pekin Insurance. In this case, the plaintiff already had a copy of the policy, had a copy of the policy limits, had answers to written discovery from Mr. Toff that indicated that that was the only policy that was even arguably relevant to this case. Plaintiff had everything that they needed from Pekin Insurance. And so those are the operative facts and the procedural positioning of this case. Moving to the motion to quash.
Counsel, what's our standard of review in your
view? I did research that issue, Your Honor, because it was somewhat interesting to me in this case. I also believe that it would likely be a more discretionary standard of review. In my research, it was supported that it was de novo based on how the decision was reached at the trial court in this case. Though I don't perfectly agree with all of the reasoning and case law that was included in the plaintiff's brief, I do ultimately agree that from my research, the proper standard of review is de novo.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. Moving on to the motion to quash the subpoena. Again, this subpoena was brought and titled pursuant to Illinois Supreme Court Rule 206A1, which is a discovery provision, and it requested the deposition of a corporate representative of Pekin Insurance. In the motion to quash, Pekin Insurance argued there should be no corporate deposition of a Pekin Insurance individual, as plaintiff already has all the relevant information that individual could provide, a copy of the policy and the policy limits. That was known to the plaintiff. This corporate representative wouldn't have had any information as to the actual transgressions between Capps and Toft or Capps and Turner, and we simply challenged that no additional relevant information could be garnished from this deposition. Through plaintiff's response at the trial court and plaintiff's briefing in this case, I'm still unclear on what purpose such a deposition would have. Rule 277E does not grant the plaintiff unbridled ability to depose anyone and everyone they want with absolutely no relevant information to be gained from that. And so the fact of the matter is there would be no relevant information that such a corporate representative deposition could garnish in this case. Plaintiff failed to raise any such relevant information and it was properly granted at the trial court and should be affirmed in this case. Moving on to plaintiff's motion for turnover, your honors have astutely hit on the issues in this case. The question is whether or not there was a tortious conversion. In the Illinois Supreme Court case of Verucci, the court lays out the standard there as insurance coverage is provided unless the subsequent user of the vehicle gained possession of it with the intent to permanently, that'd be theft, or indefinitely, that'd be tortious conversion, deprive the owner of the rights therein or the initial permittee of the rights therein. In this case, Caps asked if he could use the vehicle. The answer is no. He then took the vehicle in direct opposition to the rights of the initial permittee and Mr. Toff, the owner, because he was told no, and he took the vehicle. He took it for an indefinite amount of time because there's no evidence here he was moving it across the street, that he was going to the gas station and coming back, or that he was just switching parking spots. No, he took it. He traveled a matter of miles, and we have no idea how long he was going to take it for. That's what indefinitely means. Indefinitely doesn't mean for a long time. It means for an unknown time. And that's exactly what we have here. The facts on the record.
And so let me stop you there. My only question about that is the owner was not Turner. So
correct.
Was the indefinite deprivation, does that relate to Turner or to the owner? Are you saying it doesn't matter? They're one and the same?
Well, so if I go back to that Illinois Supreme Court quote from Verucci, it actually says "with to deprive the owner or the initial permittee of the rights therein."
Okay, thank you.
That's accurate, Your Honor. So in this case, we have all of the elements of tortious conversion that was shown to the trial court, and the trial court appropriately denied plaintiff's motion for turnover. It was plaintiff that asked for that determination. It was not a motion brought by the appellee Pekin Insurance in this case. The plaintiff at no point requested the deposition of Caps or live testimony from Caps or Turner to provide additional information or commentary on that. They took out the sword with the motion to turn over. And unfortunately for the plaintiff, the result fell against them. And so with that, the denial of the motion for turnover was proper and should be affirmed as well. And I will rest on my arguments unless your honors have any questions for me.
I don't see any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any rebuttal?
Just briefly. I do agree, and it is undisputed, that it was Amron's motion for turnover order. That motion was once again based on the evidence in the record, the deposition testimony that both parties agreed was evidence in the record. It was Amron's burden to show that that the initial permission rule applied, and under that rule, a coverage was fixed at the time of the accident. It was Pekin's burden to establish the exception to that rule, as I mentioned. And Pekin failed to do so for all the reasons that I already explained.
Okay, do my colleagues have any questions? Doesn't appear so. Thank you to both of you for your arguments. The case is submitted and the court will now stand in recess.